and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Print Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
It's a classic tale, a tale as old as time. What came first, the chicken or the egg? Or in our case, white Nick Fury, black Nick Fury, Samuel Jackson, David Hasselhoff? We're about to jump into this comic paradox today on another episode of the Second Print Comics Podcast. I am Rimzo W. Martinez here with the mighty Mr. Mark Clare. Mark, life is treating you pretty good, right?
Not too bad. Yeah. Not too bad. I'm recently betrothed, very happily. So
congratulations.
Thank you. What else? What else has been going on?
Was it a Fantastic Four-themed wedding or not?
Sadly, as has been made clear to me, that's my only regret.
You'll never be forgiven.
Fork-themed, yes. But we did have Elvis, so I think that makes up for something.
That does, in many ways.
If you're not going to do Fantastic Four, do Elvis. That's always been my rule. So maybe we'll renew the vows with the Fantastic Four, though.
I mean, you know, you had one job.
Who wants to be Dr. Doom? Administered by Dr. Doom. That would be perfect. It would make no sense, but it would be perfect.
Does somebody in like a mankini with wings on their heels like Namor jump in and be like, I object?
That does happen, as well as a plethora of supervillains, super friends, etc. will show up. Kind of like the Hulk wedding. That's how I picture it, actually.
Oh, God. That was a disaster. It ended well. It was a nice issue, but
Fisto will show up, try to make a weird offer to my potential bride-to-be. I guess it's potential till the wedding's complete.
There you go. Well, anyway, folks, before we get started, Mark and I have a ton of stuff that we want to go ahead and throw your way. One of which is, if you're not on Patreon already, I know we bring this up all the time, but really, we've got bonus content, original bonus content, from not just Mark and I together, but from me separately and from Nork separately. So if you secretly hate one of us, you can indulge in the other. We're giving out posters that are signed. We're giving out comics. We're giving out a ton of awesome crap. So people, come on. It's as little as $5 a month. And we just hit that magic number 50 for the Second Print Comics Fan Zone. So come on. We have more. Like, I'm genuine when I say this, Mark. And you and I have been podcasting for many years on separate projects. But I think the people in the Second Print Comics Fan Zone are better than everyone else. I'll say it.
In all
I'll stand
ways.
By that.
Intellect, physical appearance, interaction, enthusiasm, all the things. But the only way to get into the Second Print Comics Fan Zone, we were nice at first. We left it open a little bit to try to build up the group a little bit. But now that we have done so, now that we have an initial core in there, only way to get in is by joining the Patreon, but a measly $5. Less than literally like a Starbucks coffee or latte, you can enjoy all of our bonus content and support your two favorite comic book podcasters, or maybe only one of them if you secretly hate one of us, as Rimzo mentioned, but you have that option.
We all know there's never Mark. We know
we
that movement is there.
That's the narc movement. Never Mark. We should put out special.
He defended those drug dealers that Superman burned their home. Ever since you did that way back in like episode 4 or something, there's been a strong contingent of people who are very divided over that. Go back and listen to that episode.
Don't understand me as well from my other. If you don't know me from my other podcasting life, then you might be surprised by my rant supporting the drug dealers. But you know,
it's his alter ego.
It's not that I support the drug dealers. It's that I don't support Superman destroying their property. That's all. And then threatening them with fiery laser death if they happen to try to sell drugs again just to make ends meet for their poor families and to try to pay for all the stuff that Superman already destroyed in their homes. That's all I'm saying.
Mark, you live in Los Angeles, right?
I do.
See, folks,
living.
This is why God hates California.
Because we don't want Superman destroying our drug dealing neighborhoods.
You've got fire tornadoes. They're about to destroy your Thanksgiving. It has not been a good year for California.
Ah, that stuff never comes near me.
All righty. Anyway, we've got one more update that we just went ahead and figured out today. You want to go ahead and bring it up?
Oh, no, because we're still pending on it.
I'll
just tell them so maybe they can pressure Patreon. But for some reason, we don't have the permissions just yet. But we're hoping to offer annual Patreon memberships soon. We're waiting on something.
So there you go. We will get back to you on that. It's in the works. We're just waiting for Patreon to move over. But yeah, no, that's about it. And speaking of, and I'm glad I kind of jump straight into the Patreon stuff. I know a lot of you are tired of me just really kind of diving in on that. It keeps the lights on.
Well, if you're
on,
tired
folks.
Of it, just join up and we can stop hawking it so much.
Yeah, but this episode is actually the result of listener pressure, especially from a lot of the folks that we have our Journey into Mystery Zoom calls with. We'll be jumping on one of those after recording this episode. But Mark and I have a schedule of what we're typically going to record, and we've been pretty good about not changing it often. But there's this one area of the listener group that was so loud for so long, I had to go ahead and jump the shark and just kind of throw them this red meat, because I think it'll also help clear the road for people going forward. Especially as we start jumping into the multiverse and what if stories and the wild and wacky, insane world that is comic book canon. And essentially, it's this: when did Nick Fury become black?
And I too, now we've discussed this before. You can go back, and if you're a newer listener, I highly recommend ticking back in the podcast feed and listening to our episode zero. That's when we really discuss the origins of our fanhood, the origins of this program. But as I discussed on there, and I've mentioned in other episodes, I had about maybe, I would say about a decade-ish long, maybe not quite, dark period from comics. Sometime after college, I kind of just let my comics go by the wayside. At one point, I got down to just collecting Savage Dragon, and then at some point, I even let that go for a bit, if you can believe it, but I have since, of course, reread all of those issues. But yeah, this is something that occurred during my dark period, when I was sort of a caveman frozen in ice when it comes to comics. And I remember coming back and just suddenly I was like, oh, Nick Fury is black now and young. How'd that happen? And so it was finally good. Well, I don't know. Saying good, it was might be not the right choice, but I'm glad I could finally
say it. Rest in power, white Nick Fury. Rest in power.
Yeah, we can also talk about his fate. I think we mentioned it on a different episode, but let's just say I had to find out what happened, so I Googled it, and I've read like the 2-sentence version of the story before, but
money. It was interesting. Money's the reason.
Exactly. You know my rule. I'm not gonna read it unless if I gotta pay for it, unless I'm really, really excited about it.
Well, I was saying that in terms of, you know, what drives big changes, what drives people to change something completely. If you're not trying to cancel them online, it usually has to do with, you know, a person losing a lot of money or wanting more money. And what we'll do today is we're going to be talking about how Nick Fury became a black guy. So I want to go ahead and jump into the main story, Battle Scars. This is the 6-issue limited series that it changed, you know, the comics forever. And, you know, I mentioned at the beginning that this is kind of a chicken or an egg scenario, because for many people who are really kind of in the weeds of comics, you know that this is something that wasn't just recent, and it certainly wasn't prompted by the movies. For a lot of people, especially a lot of new listeners, their first exposure to Nick Fury anywhere was probably in the end credits of the first Iron Man film, where you see Samuel Jackson's Nick Fury standing in Tony Stark's Malibu pad. And, you know, from there, when they tried to go read the comics, they were a bit confused because, you know, you have 2 different Nick Furies. You have a black Nick Fury and a white Nick Fury, and which one is which? And this is where things get more complicated. So I'm going to try and really distill it down, so whether you really know it or you have no clue what's going on, it'll make sense from like a at-large perspective.
And there's a twist in here that I'm going to need to, that this part I still don't understand is, I want you to also give me some details on Ultimate Universe Nick Fury, who seems to be physical appearance-wise the same Nick Fury as we're going to discuss today. But I'm not sure.
It gets weird. So let's just hang on tight and we'll jump right into it. In the early 2000s, there was an effort by Marvel to try and reobtain the youth audience. At this point, video games are big. MTV was still actually playing music videos. 9/11 didn't happen, and then it did. And for the most part, it seems like comics were just not something people were willing to buy anymore. It became really something for adults, you know, your 30 and older crowd, because these are the people that were buying comics when there was really only comics. Of course, you had cartoons and movies and stuff, but, you know, video games and stuff that really took a large chunk of the youth attention away. So Marvel had a problem. They had to go ahead and find a way to bring more people in while at the same time maintaining the loyalty and the happiness of longtime readers. So what they did was essentially split the Marvel universe. You had the 616 universe, the traditional Marvel canon, which still runs today. This is with all the characters going back to the 40s of Captain America, with the Avengers and Spider-Man, Fantastic Four in the 60s. These are the people that you can read them at any point, and you're going to know that this is all part of the same ongoing story. But what they did was they started a new line, a youth line for those millennials out there, and it was called the Ultimate Universe. The Ultimate Universe started out with Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate Fantastic Four, Ultimate X-Men, and the Ultimates. And what these basically did was they put our classic favorite characters in an all-new universe in a 21st century setting, so that way they could actually appeal to the people they were reading. The Fantastic Four were in their early 20s. Spider-Man was once again a teenager. And there happened to be a whole merry school of mutants that didn't look like their, you know, main 616 counterparts, but they looked more like the characters that you saw in the popular X-Men films from 2000 from Fox. So this Ultimate line of comics would go on for about 14, 15 years before it petered out because of a whole bunch of stupid editorial decisions. But mainly, and you know, we'll talk more about the Ultimate Universe in another episode dedicated just to this, but Mark, when I started reading comics, the Ultimate Comics were my Marvel. I did not actually start reading main 616 canon until way later. So for me and a whole generation of comic book readers, the Ultimate Comics were our comics.
You were the millennial that they were targeting, specifically.
Literally.
You said, we need Remzo Martinez.
And they got me, and they've been taking my money weekly ever since. So with that said, the purpose was to go ahead and really revitalize characters that had been kind of waning. The X-Men and Spider-Man were more popular than ever before because of their recent movies that were coming out. Fantastic Four had a bit of a lapse during that time, so making them younger, putting them in the 21st century, gave them a whole new flair that, I mean, I genuinely believe a lot of my favorite Fantastic Four stories are still probably Ultimate X-Men stories. And then you know, a few years later...
Fair Fantastic Four stories or Ultimate X-Men stories?
Or you I'm sorry, are not to sound like a seal, they are Ultimate Fantastic Four stories. There it is. So
it would be funnier if your favorite Fantastic Four stories all took place in Ultimate X-Men.
It's a whole other world, folks. Whole other show.
Hey, one of my favorite Superman moments took place in Saga of the Swamp Thing. Go listen to the last episode.
It happens. So anyway, in around 2004, 2005, there was a big effort to go ahead and try and revitalize one of Marvel's flagship titles that today you hear them and you think, oh, they must have always been making money. But over the last, you know, 10, 15 years prior, they had been struggling a lot. It was the Avengers. Believe it or not, there was a day and age where nobody thought that they could ever take Thor seriously. They saw that Captain America is kind of stupid, and Iron Man was on no one's list of heroes they wanted to be. The Avengers was just not doing well. They had a great run in the 60s and 70s. They had a strong rush in the 80s, and then around the 90s, they were just kind of bland. So Marvel gave their ultimate version of the Avengers to a young Scottish writer named Mark Millar, or Mark Millar, however you want to pronounce it. And they basically said,
myself, but I don't know.
Millar. I'll say it, Millar. So they basically gave it to him and said, listen, you've got these characters, but nobody's into the Avengers. You've got this whole universe. You're doing well on a few of these other Ultimate Comics here with Bendis and the others. You got to try and make them cool. And essentially, this is where the Avengers entered the Ultimate Universe and became the Ultimates. And if you go back and read the Ultimates Volume 1 and Volume 2, you will go ahead and basically see the blueprint for the 2012 Avengers movie. It is so crazy that I'm reading this comic in the mid-2000s. I'm thinking this is going to become a movie one day. And then flash forward to 2012, I'm sitting in theaters with hundreds of other people crammed in the auditorium, and we're watching these scenes basically taken panel for panel on the big screen. It was amazing. So with that, they basically realized what we're crafting here isn't just a regular comic book. What we're crafting here is something that could potentially be made into a film, because around this time, the Fantastic Four movies were coming out. They needed source material, and they needed inspiration so that way it could realistically translate. With that said, Marvel took some liberties of some of their characters, one of which was Nick Fury. In the Ultimate Universe, to solidify that this was genuinely a different universe, they went ahead and changed the race of Nick Fury. In mainstream Marvel canon, Nick Fury is white. But in the Ultimates, he was black. You could do that because it's a separate universe. But they didn't just happen to change his race. Mark Millar went ahead and basically said, if I could cast my dream Avengers team, who would be Nick Fury? And who did it end up becoming? It ended up becoming Samuel L. Jackson. So much so that there is a scene in Volume 2 of The Ultimates where the Ultimates are hanging around in a living room, and they're like, hey, I hear somebody's going to make a movie about us. Who would you want to be you? And Nick Fury literally says, Samuel L. Jackson, who else? And it's just one of those meta moments where I read this and I'm like, God, this would just be so cool if they actually did it.
So that Nick Fury was intentionally meant to look like Samuel Jackson, though, even in its first incarnation.
Literally. And here's the funny part. You cannot take a character, you cannot take the likeness of a real human being and put them into a comic. Whether you pull out some legal jiu-jitsu or not, if it looks like that person, you're going to get in trouble. So Millar.
That's how Alan Moore got away with Richard Nixon, because he was dead.
Yeah, yeah. So Millar basically
wasn't dead. He wasn't dead when Watchmen came out. I was wrong. He's dead now. He wasn't dead.
When did Richard Nixon die?
He died in like the 90s.
No one cared about Nixon.
That was fake news that I told you. Maybe just no one cared.
One cares about Nixon, Mark. Back to topic.
Maybe no one's going to listen to Richard Nixon's like lawsuit about the defamation of his character in a comic book after everything he's been through. So
I'm just glad they're still talking about me. But anyway,
you want to talk about Richard Nixon, do you? See, now my Alan Moore has gone totally Australian, and I can't get him back to even partially.
It's like Russell Crowe if Russell Crowe was playing Alan Moore in an Alan Moore movie.
Come watch me, Richard Nixon, in me comic book.
It's gone too far. Anyway,
you're not tuning in for the impressions. I hope. I greatly hope.
Millar works out a deal between Marvel and Samuel Jackson. And Samuel Jackson is so into this, there was really no lawyers involved. Basically, Samuel Jackson told Marvel, if you ever end up making a movie with Nick Fury, that Nick Fury, it needs to be me. And flash forward to 2008's Iron Man, we see Nick Fury, and it's literally Samuel Jackson. So that is how it started. It started in the comics, in a separate line of comics in another universe, and because of a potential legal fiasco for intellectual property and likeness and all that stuff, it ended up giving us Samuel Jackson as the MCU Nick Fury.
That is quite a tale, and I guess I'm curious, when you first saw Iron Man, like, I didn't see it right away in the theaters. I don't think I saw it until maybe a year or two later, but was it a surprise when Sam Jackson appeared at the end as Nick Fury, or was that something that had gotten around the interwebs by then?
So this is funny. No movie had ever really done, like, after credit reels. The only stuff I could really think of was, like, the first Men in Black movie. And I know there are a couple others, but it just wasn't a thing you ever expected. So when I went to go see it on opening day back in Texas where I was living, I just went home after Robert Downey Jr. said, I am Iron Man. The credits started rolling. It wasn't until like a week later that a clip started going online of somebody holding up their Motorola Razr. That tells you how old this is. And they tried filming the scene, and you basically see the scene, but it was grainy. It was shitty. You know, old phones, pre-iPhone. The iPhone was just coming out at that time. So it starts going around that, hey, if you stay at the end of the Iron Man movie, there's this clip, and it's got Samuel Jackson, and he wasn't cast in, he was not included in the credits of the film. You would have never known unless you stayed after. So I went again the following week. I stayed after the credits with almost the entire rest of the theater, and we saw that scene where Tony Stark walks back into his house, and Samuel Jackson is there, and he turns around. He's like, you think you're the only hero? You're part of a broader universe, Tony Stark. And then Robert Downey Jr. is like, dude, who the hell are you? And he's like, Nick Fury. director of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative. And, I mean, the rest is history. And, like, right now, I could still feel it. Like, the hairs on my arms go up because...
The shivers, the chills.
It's just one of those moments where it's like, one, if you told me there would ever be a good Iron Man movie, I would have laughed at you. Two, if you said they would ever actually cast not only a black Nick Fury, but have Samuel L. Jackson be Nick Fury like he was meant to be in the comics for the Ultimates, I would have just said you're bullshitting. And I mean it's amazing now. We have become so spoiled with movies and games and everything else now. They're so interconnected and they play around with the source material. But I look back at that time and I just think, wow, that was one of the most perfect moments I ever remember on screen.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I even watching that movie now, I get that feeling in that scene, even having seen all the movies, even knowing everything that's going to happen. But Samuel Jackson really is, even aside from, you know, the fact that it came about through the comic book and everything, I don't care if you have a black Nick Fury in a movie, even though he's white in the comics. Like, all I care about is who is portraying the role in the right way. And I think that for maybe he's not a traditional classic Nick Fury per se, but I do think that Nick Fury's role and as played by Samuel Jackson in the MCU is perfect for the vibe of those films. It might not be perfect for everybody who's, you know, read Nick Fury stories for 50 years, but I think he's absolutely perfect for what they're doing with those movies and perfect for the character.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as, you know, people want to go back to the original source material from, like, the Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby era of Marvel, really the MCU is built on the groundwork laid by two major phases of Marvel. One would be the Heroes Reborn universe. This would give us a more interconnected Captain America with S.H.I.E.L.D. It would introduce the Triskelion. It would introduce the idea of the Avengers being a project of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then about 4 years later, you would have the Ultimates, which was really meant to capture a wave of fans who saw Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man and Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. You know, they're in the modern era. They're not in the 60s anymore. It looks like the world outside your window. So, I mean, the Ultimate comic line really, especially in the first phase of Marvel, really is the backwork for the MCU. And then as the films went onward and the universe started expanding and things started getting more interconnected, you started to see them bring in more elements from the Marvel lore at large. Those Ultimate comics don't get enough credit as they do. I mean, Ultimate Thor is completely different from mainstream Thor. And Ultimate Thor is really the Thor you see in the MCU. So we'll have to have an entire episode dedicated to this. But, you know, in terms of just Nick Fury, it, you know, that one detail by Mark Millar changed not only Hollywood, but it also had some adverse effects, as some may see, in the actual comic book medium. I don't think it's unfair to say that, at least in my opinion, so this is a Remso opinion, Mark might disagree with me, I feel that in the past 7 to 8 years specifically, the publishing arm of Marvel Comics has become nothing but a merchandising tool for the films. It used to be that the comics were prioritized as being the groundwork for films and games and TV, but now they're just basically, you know, it's just meant to be a cash grab for the
films.
The
only thing
that
confounds me about that theory, and you got to know what I'm going to bring up here, is Jonathan Hickman's X-Men. Because I don't know how that's supposed to be a cash grab for anything, to be honest, or how it's supposed to set up X-Men as heroes in new films. I don't know. I've actually heard a number of people that actually are digging what he's doing, including
all two of them.
Program.
All two of them.
And they're both fans of our show. And I won't argue with you because every fan has the right to their opinion, and we appreciate all opinions on this show. But some opinions are stupider than others. And that's one opinion that I don't understand. I guess, I don't know. I guess I'm not one to talk because I will badmouth it. And yet every time I peek into that Marvel app and see a new Hickman X-Men, I go, let me just see what he's doing here. But I'm never satisfied. It's more just like, I just need to know. I need to know what you're doing. But I am confused about, I agree, in theory, that does seem to be the way that Marvel's publishing branch has generally gone. I don't think it's a coincidence that they brought back the Fantastic Four in a regular series literally at the same time they got the rights back to the Fantastic Four. I don't think it's a coincidence, even though I don't understand the storytelling of why they did a whole new, brand new X-Men relaunch right when they got the movie rights to the X-Men back. So this stuff is obviously very related. I have not read too much Marvel over the last few years, other than a few select writers here and there. Jason Aaron's Thor, it was amazing. I love a lot of the work that Donny Cates has been doing, both on Thor and on Venom. But it's few and far between. It's very select. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Hickman is concerned, it's like hooking up with an ex. You know it's wrong, but you want it sometimes.
The analogy is almost apt, but it would be like hooking up with an ex if the sex was not bad, just weird.
That's the best way to describe
it. I can't say it's terrible writing. Like, he's a good, technically sound writer, but it's not great. I wouldn't be like, wow, you got to read this amazing writing from Jonathan Hickman. So it's hard to compare it to sex, really. But if you're going to compare it to sex, I guess you'd have to call it weird sex. Weird sex with Jonathan Hickman's X-Men.
That'll be the title of this episode now. Screw Nick Fury. anyway, go.
And something about Nick Fury.
Oh, man.
Don't wait too long to move on, or I'll find a way to tie Tom King and Kite Man into this. So
how did the mainstream Marvel Universe Nick Fury essentially replace the white Nick Fury we grew up with? That is what a lot of people have been very curious about, because the only word I have to describe it is sloppy. Mark, as you started getting into it, what were some of the thoughts going into your head? Because you grew up reading white Nick Fury, and then suddenly he looks like Samuel L. Jackson, which isn't bad inherently. It's just confusing as hell.
It is very confusing. When I first started reading Marvel Comics and coming back into things maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was just kind of confused, because there was actually two Nick Furies, because I read Original Sin, and I was like, okay, here's this Nick Fury. But then there was another Nick Fury, and he was Samuel Jackson Nick Fury, and I was very confused. And I, of course, like, had to Google this and saw, you know, I read basically the two-sentence summary of the story we're going to read, and I was just like, huh, that feels contrived. I guess, as we'll see, I don't want to spoil this story until we get into it, but let's just say I was actually excited for you to bring this up. It was like a last-minute addition to our schedule, and I was excited for it because I didn't even know where this story took place. I didn't know it had its own miniseries just to explain Nick Fury becoming black. Nick Fury, not just becoming black, but becoming Samuel Jackson, essentially, within the pages of six comic books. But I was excited to find out how they did it, for good or for bad, much like Hickman's X-Men. I don't care how, you know, it's not about if it's good or bad. It's about, I just got to know what's going on here. So now I know.
And this is where things are about to get complicated. So turn off the TV, put the kids outside, tell your wife to go grocery shopping. Because
if the kids aren't outside by now, then I don't know what kind of parenting you're doing at this point.
This is for the fellas, because it's about to get weird. Here's how this happens. The story we're about to talk about is a 6-issue limited series called Battle Scars. If you're new, you're probably wondering, why didn't I ever hear about it? It's because Marvel doesn't really want you to know about it. If you've been reading for a while and you're like, why didn't I hear about it? It's also because Marvel really didn't want you to hear about it. So here's what's happening. This series starts in 2011. Prior to that, the MCU is already turning into something awesome. We've already had Captain America, Thor, Iron Man. They take elements from the Ultimate Comic line, which had just recently ended in Jeff Loeb's Ultimatum, where they basically tried to kill off the universe. And while they're doing that, you've got mainstream canon 616 Marvel writers looking at the Ultimate Comics saying, maybe we should take that and this and all this other stuff and basically put it in our universe. So basically, everyone is picking away at the Ultimate Comics, the carcass that Jeff Loeb left over as he tried to destroy the universe. So one of the big things that they wanted to do, because you've got a ton of new readers coming in because of the movies, was they wanted to make it more familiar. So Marvel at the time, I think Joe Quesada was still around as the editor-in-chief. He basically is like, him or the other members of the editorial pool, they were like, we've got to find a way to make Nick Fury black. No matter how we do it, we've got to do it.
I don't care how you get there, just make it happen, writers.
And it was such an awkward decision for them that they ended up not only making this awkward story in the main universe, but they also tried to screw it up in the Ultimate universe, because even after Ultimatum, which was an event meant to end the Ultimate comics, they still had some straggler series that turned out. And in one of those series called Ultimate Enemy, they basically said that Nick Fury is on the run for committing some type of crime. And what they basically do is they take Black Nick Fury and they put him in the costume of a white guy that looks like white Nick Fury, but he still has an eye patch and he still calls himself Nick Fury. So now everyone's looking at the Ultimate comics and they're like, dude, this is stupid. And then they go ahead and end that series.
Wait, he wears a costume?
He basically, like, think of Samuel Jackson wearing the skin of David Hasselhoff.
Like Mission Impossible style.
Yes.
Wow.
But with an eye patch, and he still calls himself Nick Fury.
And an eye patch under the eye patch, when he pulls up the skin, there's a new eye patch.
I think it was like that. It was really freaking stupid. And it was, he was like, yeah, this is my disguise. And they make fun of him. They're like, what are you doing? Because there was a rumor, and I don't know if it has any feet to it, but this is the rumor that I heard, that they were going to find a way to switch it to keep people happy, because they were afraid of getting rid of white Nick Fury completely. So what they were going to do was they were going to find a way to make the main Nick Fury black, and the ultimate Nick Fury, the Nick Fury that caused all these problems, they were going to make him white.
They were going to try to swap him.
They were gonna put Black Nick Fury in white face. That was basically it. You took a sip right as I said that.
Yeah, choked on liquids from that one.
So it's just sloppy. So they're ruining the golden goose they have with Ultimate Sam Jackson Nick Fury, and at the same time they're bumbling what they're doing with regular Nick Fury. So here's where we're gonna get into the story. And folks, this is kind of brief because it's just not done well. But this six issue limited series comes after a Marvel event called Fear Itself. I'm never going to talk about Fear Itself because Fear Itself was freaking stupid. And this is around the time I stopped reading Marvel comics. But this was written by Alejandro Arbona. The penciler was Carlo Pagliolan, and it's just.
Now, I don't want to insult either of these men at all. I'm sure they're hardworking, good human beings who are probably great comic fans. God bless them for getting a great career in comics. But let me just say, I think there's a reason I hadn't heard of either of them before this.
I don't think they went on to do anything else after this.
I wish them well, though.
Yeah. So Battle Scars was shoved into this event because there were so many crossover titles. They knew that this was the only way to drown it out. So, you know, Battle Scars basically talks about a guy named Marcus Johnson. Marcus is...
I hated it already when we started. I just hated that name. I don't know why. I just hated the name. This is the most, like, generic, like, name we're going to give a black guy name. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But I was upset from the very beginning of the reveal of his real / not real name.
Yeah, so Marcus Johnson is a Army Ranger. The beginning of the book takes place in Afghanistan. Yeah, Bagram Airfield, Afghanistan. Ironically, my dad was stationed there in 2011. He was there. So around the time that I was reading this, my father.
Did he know anyone named Marcus Johnson?
Marcus Johnson. I don't think he would have even wanted to read this one. So Marcus Johnson, him and his. His other guy, one of the guys in his platoon named Cheese, they're under fire from the Taliban or Al-Qaeda, and they're basically defending the base, and they basically take down the bad guys who you never really see. And at this point, you know, they're attacked, and they're just getting attacked on and on and on, and they are basically the last survivors of their unit. So after 72 hours of fighting, which they barely show you, what you see is Marcus Johnson and this guy named Cheese are some of the few remaining survivors. So as if things aren't bad with most of their friends dead, 25 U.S. soldiers and 48 wounded, some dude comes over to Marcus, and he's like, Sergeant Johnson, I've got a message for you. It's about your mom. And Johnson's like, what? And the guy's like, she's dead. And it's this fast.
Just buried his like 25th buddy.
They're not even in the ground. You see all these soldiers just strewn across the airstrip just with, you know, I mean, it's bad. And then this guy comes out. He's like, by the way, I found a way to get your mail for you. It's about your mom. You want to know what it's about? Your mom is dead. So we just see that, and it's like, what do we know about this character? He's a badass with a friend who's named after food, and his mom is dead. So, 4 days...
having a bad day.
It's bad, and I mean, I don't want to criticize... I'm really lenient on art, because I am not an artist. But...
yeah, this is better than guy's, I can draw.
This guy's face, panel to panel... It's weird for me to say, you know,
he doesn't have eyes, Remzo.
He doesn't really have eyes, and he doesn't...
There's
like,
holes where eyes go, but...
it's just weird. His face, like, in any scene, whether he's fighting or he's just sitting, it's like his face is just the same. It's like he has no range of motion. So 4 days later, he's at Atlanta, Georgia, at the funeral for his mother. And off in the distance, like all funerals, you see some guy standing under a tree, and he's next to a woman, and it happens to be Steve Rogers, Captain America, and Agent 13, Sharon Carter. And you're probably wondering, how do they know Sergeant Johnson? They don't really. They know a little bit about him, but we're about to figure it out. And Captain Rogers is now... just kind of strange as he's there. He's like, who else knows about him? And Agent 13 is like, just us. We need to go ahead and bring him in. So just off the front, they're just painting it really thick. Oh, somehow this guy is special. And what ends up happening is Marcus goes home to his mom's house. And what he notices is that somebody's been moving around her stuff. And not only were they moving around their stuff, but he's found, like, bullet casings. And he's like, my mom was a teacher. My mom had no enemies. Why does the house look like it's been jacked up? And why is there a random...
maybe she was a bitch.
maybe she got down into some weird stuff. We don't know.
Maybe she was a bad teacher. Maybe she was selling drugs on the side, which, of course, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as Superman's not destroying your house.
You know, any of those outcomes, Mark, are more interesting than what's about to happen.
Literally would be much more interesting if she was turned out to be a drug dealer.
Yeah, so Marcus comes out, and he's like, officer, who's in charge of the investigation here? What's going on? I need to know what's going on with my mom. And before the guy can even say anything, I mean, at this point, we were told in some of the captions that she may have potentially been murdered. They don't really explain it. They kind of lay it on thick. They're like, well, it was a homicide or not. And as soon as he's
the bullet casing should be an indication.
Yeah, but there's no lead up, and they kind of put it there, and it's just, it feels like, oh, did I miss something? And you go back, and it's like, I don't really think I did. But as soon as he comes out and he's asking the cop, like, dude, what's going on? There's a taller building off in the distance, and somebody starts shooting at him and the cop. And Marcus saves the cop. He jumps over him and gets him behind the car. Somebody's shooting. And next thing you know, a whole bunch of these giant super thugs come out, because it's not a Marvel comic without giant super thugs. And obviously, you know, this
giant super thugs need their own spinoff series, I think.
Giant super thugs
would probably be better than this.
Way better than this. So what happens is giant super thugs come out, and they start fighting Marcus, who somehow is not only a badass Army Ranger, but he knows how to fight. So he starts, fighting these giant super thugs, but then they start dogpiling him, and eventually he gets shot in the back with an arrow. And you're like, huh, what just happened here? Who are these giant super thugs working with, and who just brought in Katniss Everdeen? Well, Marcus turns around, still not phased, except they open his mouth like, oh, man, what's going on? And he turns around and he sees Taskmaster. And I will say that this is actually a pretty good full page splash of the Taskmaster.
I was going to say this, too. We had, you know, knocked the art a little bit a minute ago, but this was a pretty cool reveal here of the splash mat. Taskmaster. That's a new villain. For a
Splash Master.
Mappitaglia to design. I love how we just always call out Mappitaglia to do tasks for us and create characters that will...
Matt, you can draw it.
Look, Matt, if you're listening, we want the Splash Master. Just make him. That's all the instructions.
And in terms of what I was saying about, like, range of motion for the facial expressions of these characters, you can't screw up Taskmaster. He's just a guy in a skull mask. The mouth doesn't even move. So...
that's a mask? That makes it way less cool.
You didn't know that?
Nah, I don't know.
It's a mask. So anyway, Marcus turns around with the only thing that's not like a smirk or an angry face. And he's like, what? And you see Taskmaster there. And he's like, some nice moves you got there. Now let me show you mine. And then we go to the next page, and it just says somewhere. And, you know, we're in an undisclosed, creepy secret lab with a guy strapped up to an oxygen tank, and he kind of looks like a Nazi. And they're basically talking about how they're going to go ahead and capture Johnson. What do we know about Johnson? Not much. But they want to make sure they could bring him in because there's something interesting about his blood. And that's about it. They just kind of show Taskmaster and Marcus fighting. And it's kind of unfair because Taskmaster is supposed to be one of the deadliest people in the Marvel Universe. He can mimic the fighting style and combat abilities of any hero. And he's beating Johnson, but it looks like he's got too much of an edge on him. And it's just, you know, it's not a terrible fight, but you've got this guy. I mean, yeah, he's an Army Ranger. He's a badass. But, you know, he's not going to go toe-to-toe with the most dangerous hand-to-hand combat guy in the Marvel Universe. But luckily, he doesn't have to, because just before he's down and Taskmaster is about to seemingly cut off his head with a giant sword, he gets hit by a shield. Whose shield? Captain America.
Who else's shield could it be? What if it was just, like, U.S. Agent? We're like, okay.
Oh, they're really bringing in everybody. You go to the next page after Taskmaster's been hit by a shield, and who do you see? You see Captain America with a whole bunch of shield agents behind him and flying cars. I will say, I always like it when they bring in the flying cars. I feel like we don't have enough flying cars and shield agents anymore.
I agree. More flying cars, the better. Why not?
Yeah. And Captain America's standing there as the shield returns, and he's like, Taskmaster, step away from Sergeant Johnson right now and surrender. And Johnson is there still with part of an arrow in his arm, and he's like, what the hell is happening? And we're asking, yeah, not because this is cool, but because this feels super forced and awkward. So that's issue one.
Super forced and awkward. That's actually the subtitle of the series.
That and weird Jonathan Hickman sex. Yeah.
Oh boy. So, Jonathan Hickman sex. I hope that phrase never gets repeated anywhere, except for the title of this show.
It's going to bother me as I sleep. So issue two picks up literally right at the end of issue one. We see Taskmaster there, and he starts fighting Captain America, and Johnson is just standing up awkwardly with an arrow still in his arm, and he's just kind of there, and Taskmaster fights him, and you know, at one point he gets an edge on Captain America. It's just like, I don't like the panel work. Like I'm on the third page and he's just hit Captain America. Do you have this page up?
Yeah, I actually look at the exact same page right now.
I like it when characters move out and they're not constricted to boxes, but I don't like the flow because you can't tell at what point in the fight you're looking at until you get to the exactly, last corner.
That's this layout can work when done right, but this is not one of those times. It's like you don't know which panel I'm supposed to go next. Did he get hit here and now he's reacting here? Is he reacting here? It's not the greatest storytelling device.
Yeah, so it's just not great. At that point, you see Taskmaster. He tosses Captain America away. He's pull out some size, you know, little sticky sword things that like Elektra has. My thing is this. Okay, I'm gonna stop right here and just kind of focus on this. Taskmaster has so many cool weapons at his disposal. He has his giant sword. He threw out ninja stars a minute ago. Now he pulls out size.
Where's he keeping all this shit, by the way?
He's like Mary Poppins. He just kind of pulls out everywhere. And I know it's a comic, and you shouldn't really think about it, but it's like, one, have something that makes a little bit of sense, and two, why would you give him boring weapons? I mean, he's like, who's the Ninja Turtle with size? Raphael? Donatello?
Oh, with the size? Yeah, I think that's Donatello. No, it's Raphael. It's Raphael.
Raphael, yeah. No, like, it's Raphael. Just... Yeah. It's weird. So as Taskmaster is about to kill Marcus, he gets shot by a form of energy or something, and I don't like how this is done. And you basically see a chick coming out of a flying car, and it's Daisy Johnson. It's Quake.
And we met her in episode two of this podcast, In Secret War.
When she was a badass. Whereas this one just kind of... She's on the cover and she's in the scene, but they downplay her. And long story short, this fight's gonna go on for a while, so she saves Marcus.
No, am I right? Is she somehow like the head of SHIELD here or something like that?
She's like the number two at this point. Okay. Because technically speaking, it's Maria Hill and Captain America. They both kind of are. But Marvel doesn't really ever just tell you who's really in charge at this point because of a whole bunch of reasons. Just know this, Nick Fury's not in charge. And Nick Fury's been a criminal for some time now because of what happened in Secret War. A few episodes back, you can learn what happened to David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury.
Is that actually why he used that as the continuity for why he's considered a criminal?
Yes.
I like that. At least that story actually had ramifications.
That story stays. And everything that comes after just makes that story look like, oh, we set this up and you all just ruined it. So basically, Quake saves Marcus and Captain America's like, I'll handle this. And I think it's kind of stupid because she's the most dangerous superhuman there. And she could literally like open up the ground and swallow Taskmaster. And she's going to leave him with a guy who fights just like him and also uses a shield because Taskmaster somehow also brought his shield with him. So that's just kind of dumb.
He must have a big backpack somewhere that I can't see because he has so many little weapons and not even little weapons like a shield. Like, I don't know where he's keeping this stuff. Under his cape somewhere, I guess.
So we go back to a location that's unknown, and we see this angry Nazi midget guy, and some other faceless goon comes out, and he's like, by the way, Taskmaster failed. Now the target is in S.H.I.E.L.D. custody. And somehow this dude that looks like he's about to die ends up like choking this dude and shoving him against a window and breaking glass. You're like, how is this guy so feeble but also so strong? It just looks like something out of Austin Powers. It's just not cool. So anyway, that's that. What are your thoughts before we get on to the next part? Because it doesn't get better.
Oh, man. How often do I have to give you thoughts on this one? Because it's my thoughts aren't evolving that much.
Neither is the story.
much like my thoughts, the story's not evolving much. At this point, I'm just kind of thinking, like, can you just tell me how he's Nick Fury? Like, because I know where this is going. I know why I'm reading this. I guess only because you told me why I'm reading this. I'm not sure. Did people know what the point of the story was before they picked it up, or was it just this?
I don't think the writers really did either.
I don't think anybody did. Yeah, I'm not impressed. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting to see what the point of all this is, I guess, is what I'm waiting for.
Oh, well, we do answer one of your questions. Who is the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I'm sorry, who's the director of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Apparently now it's Daisy Johnson. And it's really weird because and I get confused because she almost looks like
somebody,
Maria Hill.
I guess I paid more attention to this than you did, Remzo.
Well, understand this, and I'm not saying this just as a random excuse, but this was just something that I still don't understand. Between 2011 and 2017, S.H.I.E.L.D. came back, but it wasn't anywhere near like S.H.I.E.L.D. before because S.H.I.E.L.D. had been disbanded, replaced by an agency called Hammer, and then Steve Rogers comes back from the dead, and Nick Fury's still a criminal, and no one knows what's going on. So for like 4 years, you had Captain America, Daisy Johnson, and Maria Hill all switching out roles of director. And depending
on the
story,
they introduced this new Nick Fury too, just to add to the mix.
Who's about to become director because he obviously, if your name is Nick Fury, you're
talking about nepotism. Jeez.
We haven't even explained that yet. That's just we haven't gotten there yet. So anyway, I guess I forgot this. Daisy Johnson is agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. is director of S.H.I.E.L.D. for like a week. So they take him to a helicarrier, and you basically see all the typical, big computers, big giant eagle emblem, Dum Dum Dugan, and you see him getting patched up. And then Captain America comes in, and he's like, hey, I just wanted to make sure you're doing all right. And Marcus is like, Captain, I need to know what's going on. And Captain America's like, nah, man, you've been through an awful lot this past week. No need to make it worse.
That's not a cryptic way to comfort someone.
Yeah, and I mean,
like, telling you what's going on will make your day worse. Anyway, bye. What?
Yeah,
what?
it's just weird. And he's like, I'm not going to tell you anything. I just want to make sure you're okay because we're friends. I want to believe that Captain America is like everyone's friend, low-key, but he's just here it just feels weird because he's been like watching him from the distance, and it's just very not Captain America-like. So Marcus is like, Captain, what's happening here? Who is that man in the mask? As if he doesn't watch the news in the Marvel Universe, please.
Yeah, that's what bothered me too. Like, who is this guy? Like, you live in this universe. This stuff is on the news. You know who the superheroes are and the villains, you would think.
I feel like they would at least have their version of, like, E! News, but Hero Edition, like...
He was almost acting like he'd never heard of, like he didn't live in the Marvel Universe. It was almost like, oh, wow, what are these superpowered things? What's happening?
Yeah, so he's like, I need to know what's going on. I guess my mother's dead. My mother died because of me. I need to know what's going on. And then Captain America basically gives him a rundown of who Taskmaster is, and he's like... I gotta go, bye. And he walks away and says, stay safe. And he's basically given him no answers, except the only answer he gave about explaining who Taskmaster is probably something Marcus could have just Googled, but whatever.
So
what happens next is really stupid. Basically, he's gonna be held in a brig for his own safety, which I feel like you're telling me they don't have just a regular room at S.H.I.E.L.D. They have to stick him in something that looks like that looks like, you know, a prison, and they lock him
in solitary confinement here in this crappy bunker.
Yeah, and it's just really stupid because at this point he's like, ah, fine, I guess I gotta find out my own answer. So as he's taken to the cell, he finds a way to break out, and he starts beating all of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. He couldn't take on all the big muscle dudes earlier, all the big goons, but somehow he's able to take down like 5 S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
It was the really easiest escape ever. He's just like, hey guys, I need some food. And they just open the door like, oh yeah? And he just punches them in the face.
Well, here's what's really weird. I went back a page when they stick him in the brig, and you're in a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier. It's supposed to be like an aircraft carrier. Why is he in a room with bricks?
That's a great question.
It just seems...
they're not real bricks.
Why would you put...
painted like bricks.
Why would you paint it like bricks?
I have no idea.
That's going to bother me. So anyway, he escapes. He somehow, you know, he got shot in the arm back with a arrow. It's just kind of stupid. He's either super strong or super weak. But he's
we'll get to it. I was thinking the same things, how much that annoyed me. They do kind of explain it sort of later on in the series. But
yeah, so he escapes.
It's not a very satisfactory explanation, but it's something.
I hate having to describe this comic. I do this for you, folks. I do this for you. So anyway, he escapes on one of the flying cars. He's shooting at S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and he escapes. And he's basically, you know, trying to find his friend Cheese. And as he's trying to meet up with him, a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents basically figure out that he was communicating with him. They try and grab him, and next thing you know, Marcus and Cheese end up fighting all these S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, eventually escaping. And somewhere, just watching in the distance, because why the hell not, you see just some dude standing in like this weird costume out of the 90s, just stoically watching as Marcus and Cheese are eventually running away from the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
Like a Moon Knight, like purple Moon Knight.
It's supposed to be like Zodiac, Scorpio. Scorpio. Scorpio is sometimes Hydra, sometimes his own thing. It's not him, but it looks like him. So you're kind of wondering what's going on. This makes sense later. For those of you that don't know, Scorpio is the brother of Nick Fury, David Hasselhoff Nick Fury. So at this point, we think, oh, Scorpio's involved. That must mean Hydra's somehow involved. That would explain the weird old Nazis earlier, because Nazis in the Marvel universe are usually Hydra. So Marcus gets back to some hotel, because obviously when you're on the run, you stay, you know, a few hours away in a motel, and he meets up with one of his guys from his Ranger unit who you saw in issue 1 and earlier get into a fight. You see Cheese, and that's
all Cheese.
That's all you need to know. He's his sidekick, and his name is Cheese. And
I can't wait. I'm not even going to say it. What happens? I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to say I can't wait to talk about it. Keep going.
Yeah. So anyway, they're talking, and, you know, Mark is like, by the way, I met Captain America. And they have like a random conversation as if they haven't just been in one of the weirdest situations ever. And now apparently he has the power of the internet, and he's searching up Taskmaster because now he's like, I need to make him talk to figure out, you know, why he attacked me and what happened to my mom. Did someone kill her or not? What's happening? So that's the end of issue 2.
My comments are, let's move on.
Yeah. So
that's what I actually was thinking this whole series. Let's move on. I originally, I don't know why, I must have like mislooked at the issues. I thought it was a 4-issue series. And at some point I realized it was six, and I was like, oh God, really?
Yeah.
I need six issues to tell me what's going to happen here. I know where you're going to end up with, because I know why I'm reading this, but man, let's move on. Anyway, move on.
Yeah, it's painful. It's painful. So somehow in their motel, him and Cheese are basically trashing the place, and there are guns everywhere. How did they get all those guns? Well, you know, because stuff happened, and it just makes sense because they're resourceful. And what do they decide to do? They start going to all of Taskmaster's old hangout locations, and they try and find his goons. And Marcus Johnson and Cheese start fighting all these random guys at bars.
Just violating the constitutional rights of dozens of otherwise, you know, they look like tough guys, but from what I can tell, they were just playing pool at the bar when these guys just stormed in and started beating them up.
Yeah, so it's weird. So they
first I defend the drug dealers, now I'm defending the Taskmasters like buddies. But as far as I can tell, they're worthy of defending. They didn't do anything wrong here. They're just hanging out,
having fun, drinking.
Being assaulted by these two psychos.
The biggest crime is that they were in this story. So anyway, Marcus and Cheese go off to DC. Marcus is, you know, talking to himself, and he's basically freaking out. He's having a breakdown because he's like, well, you know, Afghanistan, my mom dying and stuff like that happened a week ago, and Captain America's, you know, he wants to be my friend. Now he's my enemy and Taskmaster, and I'm freaking out. And next thing you know, somebody walks behind him. It's Cheese. And Marcus pulls a gun out on him. And he's like, it's me. Put the gun down. For the love of God, man, it's me. What's going on? And, you know,
We didn't need this.
Yeah.
We didn't need Mark. Well, you could argue we don't need this whole series, but we didn't need this thing where he's also like losing his mind, having
fun. I hate how like, you know, heroes and stuff in the Marvel universe rarely have their own breakdowns because they experience a lot of shit. But it's like whenever you put a soldier in a comic, they have to have PTSD. I don't like that.
Unless you're Tom King, and then you could do a whole
everyone has childhood trauma and attempted suicide attempts.
Yeah, then everybody does.
Yeah.
From the secretary to Kite Man.
Everybody does. So anyway, you know, a night passes and we see this guy breaking into the place where Marcus and Cheese are staying. And who is it? It's Deadpool. And he literally stands over Marcus and he's like, hi, I'm Deadpool. I'm going to shoot you now.
Normally, I would be more excited to see Deadpool. But in this case, I just felt bad for Deadpool that he had to be in this.
When you have to start stealing Deadpool's popularity and credibility, and you still don't do him right, there's a problem. And, yeah, it just doesn't get any better, because now you have Cheese, who's apparently driving around town, and he picks up a radio, and he starts listening on S.H.I.E.L.D., and apparently they know where they are. And then you go to the next one, and basically, you know, one of the most dangerous mercs in the Marvel Universe is pretty even-handed fighting this random guy who we've just met for the first couple issues. It's not one of my favorite Deadpool fight scenes. In fact, it's barely a fight scene. It's just bad. So they fight, and they fight, and next thing you know, Deadpool gets pinned to a wall. You still don't know why he was really there. Do they explain why Deadpool was there to kill him?
I think they're all just, there's a contract out on him.
Oh yeah, the evil
just a random contract. That's why like everybody was going after him. That's why Taskmaster was going after him. He just has a hit out on him. So all the mercs, all the people that, you know, do assassinations, they've picked up on this.
Yeah, so yeah, that's happening. And what's funny is there is one scene where Marcus tries to like cut out Deadpool's heart, and he's like, wow, man, that's not cool. And Marcus is like, why are you after me? And Deadpool's like, oh, you try and carve my heart out, and you have the nerve to ask me why I'm after you? You killed that lady in Atlanta. She was a school teacher.
I hate the portrayal of Deadpool here, because he doesn't feel like Deadpool. He feels like this could almost be any assassin. Like, he doesn't have that kind of Deadpool charm, the Deadpool personality, the Deadpool wit.
So, basically, as Deadpool's about to try and kill Marcus, he gets stabbed by Taskmaster and pinned against a door. So basically, you know that Taskmaster and Deadpool aren't working together. And, you know, right before Taskmaster is about to shoot Marcus with another bow and arrow, Taskmaster gets shot by Cheese, who just wound up in on a rooftop right across from the street where they were fighting on the same floor, and he shoots Taskmaster. It's just the fighting is not good. And basically, Mark is able to get away. Taskmaster has armor, so of course now they're fighting each other. And, you know, right before Taskmaster is about to kill him, Marcus pulls out a button, and apparently there were bombs in the building. So we don't know when he had time to do that or why he did that or if there was anyone else in the building. But obviously he just blew it up to take out Taskmaster. They still fight, and at this point, Taskmaster's like, fuck it, I don't care. I'll tell you whatever you want. So that's about it. Right before
Taskmaster's like, just get me out of this story, man. I'll tell you anything.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not getting paid enough for this. You want to know, you'll know. And right before he's about to tell him everything he wants, what happens? They turn around and they see the Serpent Society full of serpent bad guys who, I will be honest with you, as much of a Captain America fan as I am, I don't recognize any of these specific people.
I can name a one of them.
These are the reserve list Serpent Society guys.
It's like the guy, it's the JV squad. It's like the Serpent Society A all got COVID and they had to bring in the backups.
Basically. So next issue happens and we see this guy. He's laying on a hospital bed and he's about to flatline and they're trying to keep him alive. And then as soon as they go ahead and defibrillate him, he somehow has the strength of a bunch of men and starts beating up the doctors. And he's like, I will not die. I will not die until he pays. And you're still like, okay, angry Nazi guy. Like, who are you? What's going on? And, you know, that would be a nice place to give us some explanations. But no, the next page we go back to New York and we see Cheese providing cover fire. We see Marcus carrying Taskmaster, who's injured, and they're being chased by the B-list Serpent Society. And you know, because he's a badass, and this is just bad writing. He gives Taskmaster to Cheese, and he goes back to fight the Serpent Society with nothing but a knife and a gun. And remember, he's just a normal person. And he says, "I'm going out like a ranger," and it's just. I know it's supposed to feel like cool and inspiring, but it's not.
They're trying to make us think this guy is a badass. They're trying to, you know, make it look, build up this character as someone likable, as someone that we can root for, as someone who's standing up against all odds, fighting all these supervillains, doesn't know what's going on, but he keeps fighting anyway. That's the theory, and I understand what they're trying to do. Problem is, it doesn't work. It's not working at all. They haven't made him a compelling character. They haven't given us any real reason to be attached to this character other than we meet him, we know his mom died, he doesn't know what's going on, and this is all going to lead to something.
So anyway, Marcus is fighting the Serpent Society because suddenly he's caught a second wind. Cheese is trying to, I guess he's ditched Taskmaster. He's trying to run away, and right before this, he gets punched by some random dude, and it turns out to be Scorpio. Is he Scorpio? We don't know. We don't know, EO. And it's just Marcus giving like this weird inner dialogue for the next couple pages. You see him fighting the Serpent Society. It's just not compelling at all. And out of nowhere, I guess Deadpool's had a change of heart because he starts coming out and he starts literally murdering the Serpent Society. So obviously, this is why they brought in these random B-listers, because Deadpool's going to kill them.
Because they're going to die.
Yeah.
Two seconds earlier, Deadpool is trying to kill this guy, by the way.
Yeah.
And they explain it why he's, you know, this very lame version of Deadpool is like, hey, well, I figured if these guys are coming after you, you might be a good guy after all. It's like, so what? Since when do you care?
Yeah, so they've been able to get away. Deadpool's fighting the Serpent Society. We are back to Taskmaster, and Marcus is interrogating him again. And, you know, we finally get one word out of Taskmaster. Marcus is like, now look at me and ask yourself, do you think I have it in me not to shoot you? And Taskmaster looks at him and he says, Orion. And Marcus is like, what the hell is Or? And before he even finishes saying Orion, he turns around and we see Scorpio, not Scorpio. He kicks Marcus in the face. He electrocutes Taskmaster with a glove. And then we see him beating him up and he's trying to basically tell him, like, stay down. This is your last chance. Leave it alone. And oddly, this guy, this mysterious bad guy.
Start a new life. Get out of here. Start a new life or you're going to die.
Yeah, and it's just really weird. Next thing you know, I guess we see S.H.I.E.L.D. show up, and Deadpool hasn't quite killed everybody, so it's like a mess. It's like, you know, playing of G.I. Joes. You have the whole battle, it's gonna be one linear story, and then you pull out all your other characters, and everyone starts dying, because why not? It feels messy. So somehow Marcus is left to escape. He meets up with Cheese, they go to another hotel, and at this point, Cheese is like, "I'm with you till the end, buddy." And Marcus is like, "Yeah, man, I know." So he knocks out Cheese, and he's like, "I'm sorry for dragging you into this, Cheese, but I won't let you get killed for me. I have to do this." And he goes driving off, and we see this mysterious dude. And somehow, this is just stupid. They flip around so much. One minute we're in a city, the next minute we're following this guy who may or may not be Scorpio. And you know, you're in like this secret lair, and somehow Marcus has been able to find him and get in, and they're fighting, and somehow the guy that was able to beat him up earlier is now super weak, and Marcus is like, tell me who you are, tell me, or I swear to God, I'll kill you, who are you? And he pulls off the guy's mask, and who is it? It's this white guy with an eye patch, and he looks at him and says, "How about this? My name is Fury, kid. And so is yours." And that is one of the dumbest pieces of dialogue I've ever read in my life.
God awful.
So now we know that the guy who we thought was Nick Fury's brother may or may not have been Scorpio is actually not Scorpio, and it's Nick Fury. And that's it.
How about this?
Yeah.
Just why?
So we go back in issue 5.
I also just the look on Marcus Johnson's face when Nick Fury says, "And so is yours," is the same look on my face at this point. I'm just like wait, when I realize I have two more issues and I thought this is the last one, the same look. I was like, huh? What?
Yeah. And it's like, oh, suddenly he's not black. He's only half. Well, there you go. Issue 5 starts, and we're going back to Czechoslovakia 30 years ago. We see the super hot secret agent lady killing a bunch of Hydra agents, and then she's planting a bomb and blows it up, and I guess Nick Fury was also there, so Nick Fury saves her from an explosion. They end up outside, and immediately they start hitting on each other, and then they hook up. So now we're back to the future at decommissioned S.H.I.E.L.D. base.
We really race through their romance, huh?
Yeah, that like I'd usually say go back and read it, you'll see more, but you literally that's it. So now they explain where Marcus and Nick Fury were in this issue, where they should have done it an issue ago. They're at S.H.I.E.L.D. safe house, and you know, Nick Fury's basically talking about how he knew Marcus's mom. Marcus's mom was the sexy secret agent lady we saw, and Nick Fury's telling him a story, and he's like, "After 9 months taking down that Hydra missile base in Czechoslovakia, Sergeant Johnson, you were born. I'm gonna change out of this Halloween costume now, and you can shoot me, or you can listen to the rest." And Marcus is like, "This is a lie. It's a damn lie. My mother was a school teacher. She organized bake sales, not secret missions." And Nick Fury is like, "Your mother was a strategist, a planner. But this she didn't plan for," as if it's just, it's like he's trying to make a joke, but it's not. And basically what we see is that she ended up getting pregnant, and Nick Fury, who was at the CIA at the time, learns about it. So he basically gives her a way to go have a new life. So she starts up a new life as a teacher, has Marcus, and then that's it. And apparently Nick Fury, as much as he wanted to be a part of this kid's life, he knew it would be dangerous if he did. So Nick Fury is like, and that lie, that protection lasted your entire life until 3 weeks ago, when by sheer dumb luck, a wannabe spy master uncovered my secret and gave it to someone who hates me more than pretty much anyone alive. So now we know that somehow Nick Fury is responsible for Marcus's mom being murdered. And it's someone called Orion, who looks like one of the cheesiest villains you'll ever see. It's like, I can't even explain it. It's stupid. And he's like,
he's got these like ram horns. He kind of looks like, I feel like kind of looks like Orm from Aquaman, maybe a little bit.
Something like it. And Nick Fury's giving you the backstory of Orion, who's like basically the secret leader of Hydra. Long story short, they explain a lot of shit that doesn't matter. I'm not even going to bother with it. It's just poorly done. So what does Nick Fury do? He keeps calling him his son, and he's like, "Yeah, your real name's actually Nick Fury." And next thing you know, Marcus punches him, and he's like, "It's Marcus Johnson." And he's blaming Nick Fury for killing his mom. So it's about what you would expect. It's another fight that lasts too many panels, and next thing you know, right before Mark is about to really fight him, oh, I guess Hydra or somebody has figured out that that they're there. So, oh yeah, it's Hydra. It's just, God, this is, they don't even look like Hydra agents. They're green, so you know that. So basically, they shoot some gas canisters in the room, and they knock out Nick Fury and Marcus. Cheese wakes up the next day, and he's like, "Ah, I've gotta save Marcus." So that, yeah, it's just like that. There's no point in that page.
You son of a bitch, Marcus.
Yeah. So next thing you know, we go back to another warehouse because the world is just warehouses, and we see Marcus.
There are so many warehouses in the Marvel universe. Let me tell you. I guess in all comic book universes, but specifically in the Marvel universe, and specifically in this story.
Yeah, so we go to another universe. I'm sorry, we go to another warehouse. They're chained to some.
I wish you went to another universe. That'd be way more interesting.
Dude, let's just get through this. This is bad.
I'm with you.
They're chained. they're hanging in chains. And next year we find out that the old crippled Nazi man, who's also strong, is actually Orion. And long story short, Orion needed Fury and Marcus because what has kept White Nick Fury young for so many years is something called the Infinity Formula, which basically slows down his aging. And in Marcus's blood, because he was born of the Infinity Formula, it's also supposed to be more refined or pure than Nick Fury's, which was just given to him. So basically what Orion wants to do is he wants to literally bleed them both out and then put his blood in him. It's as gross as it sounds. But here's the real gross part. As Orion is taunting Fury, he's like, you're telling me this guy is your son? I don't see a resemblance. And you think for a second it's a joke because Marcus is black. So apparently they had talked about this earlier. They're like, okay, guys, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to taunt them. I'm going to say this joke, and I need you to basically go do something horrible, which is to go literally pull out Marcus's left eye. And I gotta say, this is one of those scenes where it's like, really? If you weren't laying it on thick before, you're doing it now. Because a guy comes over, cuts his eye, and then gouges it out with his hands.
You're like, oh yeah, because Nick Fury needs to have an eye patch. So, okay, that's what we have to do. At least they gave an explanation. I got this whole time, like, how are they going to explain him having an eye patch in the same eye? But I guess as cheesy as an explanation as it is, at least it is sort of ish a logical explanation of this villain just wanting to be a villain and do a villainous thing and be like, oh, you don't look enough like your daddy, so we'll just take your eye out. And in any other book with better art, this might be really gross, but luckily for us, the art isn't very good, so it wasn't that gross. It was just like, oh, it was more just like, oh, this is how you're doing this?
Here's the real dickish part. Speaking of daddy, while Marcus is getting his eye pulled out, Nick Fury is somehow able to get out of his chains, and he kicks a Hydra goon and picks up a machine gun and starts murdering like 30 people. So now it's Nick Fury and Marcus, who's also able to somehow escape.
Zero explanation how he gets out of these chains, by the way. He's just out. We just see him out. Yeah,
so now we're at the point where, Marcus has fallen into some type of hole or something. But long story short, the whole fight was for nothing because Orion gets Marcus over to a lab and they start literally transfusing their blood. And next thing you know, Marcus turns back into like a 20-year-old mega super thug Nazi Hydra guy. Because why Mark?
Because comics.
Yeah. Orion does. Because Orion. Comics, this stupid thing happens. Somehow you take someone's blood and you become young and strong.
Yeah, like I could buy that the blood keeps this guy living longer or maybe eventually helps him with aging. But in 2 seconds, he's like huge and jacked with all these muscles again.
Oh, I got to correct myself. It wasn't Marcus on the table. It was Nick Fury. They literally are wearing the same.
It's Marcus.
No, he's white.
it's definitely Marcus.
It is?
His skin is, it's definitely, because look at his, I don't know what page you're on, 19? It's,
he's white. He's white.
It's bad coloring.
Oh, God. Yeah, okay, so.
The same outfit Marcus has been wearing.
Okay, so I stand corrected. So they put Marcus back in a cell, because why kill him after you do that? Because story, I guess. And now Marcus is somehow strong again, and he starts beating people up, and he has a makeshift
eye patch. You're right.
That was White Nick Fury on the table.
The art is this bad.
Yeah, it's
Because they captured Nick right
before that. That was white Nick Fury on the table, and it was Marcus who fell in the shaft.
Yeah, and but look at the art there.
This is so bad.
They're both laying there. You cannot tell. It actually looks more like Marcus, if not for the skin.
This is so bad. So anyway, issue 6 starts, and oh yeah, apparently it was white Nick Fury, and like I guess Orion saw, so now he's like chained him up, and he's just like cutting him across the chest with a knife, and he's just fucking around with him. And meanwhile, you know, a few other Hydra agents are going around, and they're like, we're, you know, people are like disappearing and shit. What's going on? And apparently Marcus comes up, and now he's made himself an eye patch. He's got like a freaking machete and a gun. He's just murdering people left and right. So long story short, it's just like 6 pages of him fighting people. Nothing really happens. And then what they're going to do is they're going to launch an attack on S.H.I.E.L.D. because why not? And Marcus comes in and he's like, not today. And he starts throwing grenades everywhere. Where did he find them? I don't know. But he starts blowing shit up. He's killing everybody. Next thing you know, Marcus starts fighting Orion like any other boss fight. You don't really know what's happening. And then right before Marcus is about to die, and we don't know where White Nick Fury is, who jumps in? S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Avengers, Captain America, Black Widow, and Hawkeye, because yay. Why not? Yeah. Usually it's exciting.
I was excited because I knew that meant the story was probably coming to an end finally.
That's a good answer. So anyway, Cheese is there, and I guess Cheese brought the Avengers over because why not? So they're fighting Orion and Hydra, and long story short, Marcus somehow sticks a bomb to Orion's chest, so he blows up. And so he
dies,
yeah.
I guess.
And somehow Marcus gets like a concussion, so he gets knocked out. And the next day he wakes up in a hospital, and here you have him all bandaged up, and some guy is standing over him. And, oh, it's White Nick Fury. And he's like, hello, Marcus. And Marcus is like, Fury. And Fury's like, I want to tell you about my other son, Mikkel. He's dead because of me. I knew he had a son. I never remembered his name. And I don't think this is like the only other time ever it's been brought up about Nick Fury's other son. Who's the mother? I don't know. But I think the kid was bad. Anyway, Nick Fury's like, I never once thought about reaching out to you ever, because I knew that if I did, you and your mother would have been killed. And you both deserve better than that. And Marcus is like, I get it. You were trying to protect us. I don't like it, but I get it. And I can respect it to a point. And then Marcus is like, so what now, white dad? And I just threw that last part in there. Nick Fury is like, me? Well,
see, now that would have been funny. That would have been the best line of dialogue if it actually existed in this comic.
Nick Fury,
white dad.
Yeah, white Nick Fury is like, me? Well, the Infinity Formula that's been keeping me ticking all these years is gone. Nature will soon catch up. I've got few things left to accomplish with this life. You, on the other hand, you've got a choice to make. Go back to your life or get fixed up with a new one. Take your chances that no one else comes after you. Or you could get in the game and help hunt some of these bastards down. Your call. And next thing you know, he turns around as he's about to walk out. And he's like, oh, I was a ranger too. Like father, like son. So this is what's really fucking stupid. The next page jumps several weeks ahead.
This is my favorite part, actually.
Marcus shaves his head, grows a beard, gets an old uniform from when Captain America, Steve Rogers, was not actively Captain America. Bucky Barnes was. This is called the Super Soldier Suit. And next thing you know, Cheese walks out. And apparently now Cheese is also part of S.H.I.E.L.D. So Nick Fury walks – I'm sorry.
Just like that. You did a great job calling the Avengers, so guess what? You're hired. That's all we care about.
Yeah, so
this guy.
So Marcus and Cheese walk out, and they see Daisy Johnson. She's like, look at you two, Nick Fury and Phil Coulson, agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They say it. This is so forced.
Oh, yeah, right here. Yeah.
And Cheese looks at – oh, yeah, so Phil Coulson, yeah, Agent so Coulson from the movies.
That's the big reveal, Phil Coulson. This whole time, Cheese has been Phil Coulson. Remember him from the movies, guys? That's what they're saying.
Yeah, so it's
– movies, right? So now you like this because this is Phil Coulson and he's in the movies and you like the movies. And look at him. He's Samuel Jackson just like the movies. Remember the movies? That's all there's. That's all they're doing.
It's so flat. It could have been done so well, but so flat. So
I'm not sure it could have been done so well. There was no way to shoehorn the existence of Agent Phil Coulson into this story. It's bad enough they're shoehorning Samuel Jackson versions of Nick Fury into the regular Marvel universe in such a contrived way. But now we got to wedge Phil Coulson into this.
Here's the dumbest part. So now, as you look at now bald, one eye Marcus, who's now Samuel Jackson,
who is like 10 times more muscular than before somehow.
Yeah, it's like he went on keto and he started doing P90X. Daisy Johnson calls him Nick Fury, and Coulson is like Coulson cheese, whatever the fuck. He's like, wait, why'd you call Marcus Nick Fury? And Daisy's like, oh, that's his legal birth name. His mother named him Nicholas Fury Jr. The old man buried it, but it went. But when it went wide, we got hold of the records. And Cheese is like, oh, I guess your name is Nick Fury. That is the best thing I've ever heard. And now Fury is like, shut up, Cheese. And Cheese is like, it's Agent Coulson to you, Fury. And then the next page is them going out together as Nick Fury and Agent Phil Coulson killing Hydra agents. The end. God, I want to rate this.
How do you even rate this? That's the question. Okay. You want to go first?
Yeah. And I think this is an all-time first. I'm giving the artwork a 2, and I'm giving the story a 1, because this abortion of a story should have never happened.
Remzo, we are not always exactly on the same page. We're often pretty close. Today we are on the exact same page. Those are the exact same numbers that I had in mind before you said anything. It's hard for me to go below the 2 with an art because I'm trying to be fair to the guy here. He's a way better artist than me. That can't be the standard because we're judging against all comic art. But it's not like there's a number of panels and scenes where it is really bad. Like the fact that we can't tell which Nick Fury is which. The fact that there's certain panels where the characters are just like, it's almost like they're just scribbled in. Like some panels he just like says, oh, I'm just gonna, okay, there's a guy, he barely has a face, who cares, moving on. But you know, there's some other art that like I can, you know, I can't just say it's terrible art. Like it's I can see what's happening. I can't go much more below it too. I don't feel like that's fair to the artist. But story,
I feel like the penciler was good. I would blame the inker and the color.
Yeah, I think the finishing was maybe more of the problem.
I think there was a big disconnect.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So I mean, yeah, I can't say the art is awful. It's not good. It's still below average. So that's why I'll give it a 2. The story, however, and the dialogue, however, I feel like we're actually being generous with the ones. To be honest with you,
wow.
I'm going to stick to a 1 because I'm not trying to insult anyone here. I mean, you can't go much lower than a 1, a 0.5. I'll stick with a 1 because there were a couple of lines of dialogue that I understood, I guess, as sentences. Sentences were formed, grammar was used, so you get a 1.
Deadpool was there. So
Deadpool was there, horribly written and contrived.
The Avengers were in a panel.
I'll say it's a nice change of pace. No, it's not a nice change of pace. It's just a change of pace. It's a big change of pace from reading Alan Moore's Swamp Thing last episode, which is which is probably one of the best written comic books ever in the history of the universe. And then switching over to this, quite the contrast. It's just, this is so shoehorned. And I want to say there might be a better way to.
Could you hear it like in my voice though? Because I've never had a hard time. Usually if something is even slightly campy or bad, it's still fun to read. This is not fun. This is a bad comic book.
And I thought about, I mean, I gave credit to the Weird Science Comics guys and their use of the Fuck You 5. And that is what we gave Maximum Carnage, the Fuck You 5, for the entirety of the 14-part series. But I can't, in good faith, give that this high a score. I would read Maximum Carnage dozens of times over before I ever read the story.
Any day of the week.
Dozens. Let me read it every damn day. Maximum Carnage is fantastic compared to this. Maximum Carnage just went on too long and involved too many characters. But boy, any issue of Maximum Carnage was better than anything I read here. I mean, it's not even close. So yeah, a 3 is, I think it's a fair, possibly even generous score for this book. It's hard for me to even recommend, like a lot of stories.
It's like when you go take your SAT and you write your name and that's like 10 points.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it existed. Exactly. Therefore, it can't be worse than not existing.
Right. That's how you got. That's how we got as high as a three. Just by the fact that it exists, human beings worked on it. There are sentences, there are pictures. So we're giving you the basics there. But this is not something I could even look. I'll read Jonathan Hickman's X-Men all day long before reading this. Like, I don't know. At least that has like stuff happening that's occurring and it's different and it's weird. And I'm kind of trying to figure out what's going on. There's nothing like that here. There's nothing even remotely, like mildly, even in a bad way, even in a what the fuck are you doing way that's intriguing about this. Any other story we've talked about, even ones we don't love, like I think our lowest rated thing we discussed in any episode was Maximum Carnage. Even that, I would say, oh, it's worth going to give a read. It's worth going to see what this is all about. I will say this right now to anybody listening. This is not, you should not go read this. You should not read it for free. You should not read it if you get paid to read it. You should not read this. You won't get more, you will get more enjoyment out of us talking about it. I guarantee it. You might be tempted if you're the kind of person who likes me, like me, who likes to hate read. I like to hate read. I like to read things that piss me off. I like to read Tom King's Batman, Batcat, 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 Batcat. Even though it drives me crazy, I like to read it because I'm weird. I like to read Jonathan Hickman's X-Men. I like to look at the flowcharts and not understand the timelines. I love to not understand those things. There's nothing lovable about this in any way, shape, or form. I thought there would be. Like, I was excited about this. I was like, let me at least see what kind of cheesy route they took to shoehorn this, you know, the Samuel Jackson version of Nick Fury into the Marvel universe. And I don't know how anybody could write shoehorning a Samuel Jackson version of Nick Fury.
It's not the fact that they just did that. They also managed to ruin Phil Coulson at the exact same time.
Why do we have to cram Phil Coulson into this? Why? I mean, there's no reason for it. And then they make Phil Coulson out to be this badass Army Ranger. Like, that's not even what he's ever portrayed as in the Marvel Universe, in the MCU. So I don't even see what the point
is. I watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm not an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. I will say that the Phil Coulson in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is still more interesting than cheese.
Phil Coulson dead in the first Avengers is more interesting than cheese.
Literally.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so yeah, it's going to be hard for us to get below this score, I think. I mean, it's going to be a challenge. I'm going to actually challenge the listeners out there to find us a story we might be able to rate lower than this. I don't know how I'm going to be able to, but
here's
awful art, because it's going to be hard to get lower than a one on a story. Like, I'm going to feel real bad giving anyone less than a one out of five on their writing.
So here's the one thing I forgot to mention. What happens to white Nick Fury? After now Nick Fury Jr. is now here, and Nick Fury.
Well, he already mentioned that the Infinity Formula is wearing off. And then, of course, I think maybe a couple of years after this, we have Original Sin, which leads to, I think we talked about it in another episode, but I don't think we went into it too much.
Long story short, because Original Sin is also one of my, I think, the worst Marvel events of all time.
I didn't hate it, actually. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it like this.
It's not this. No, it gets at least a fuck you five. Spoiler, if we ever do that. But like, long story short, somebody killed the Watchmen. I'm sorry, no, not somebody killed the Watch. Somebody killed the Watcher, Owatu, and they stole his eye. And long story short, Nick Fury's basically responsible for this. And as a punishment, white Nick Fury becomes some type of celestial being called the Watcher or the Overseer, some shit like that. That's referenced maybe like in Donnie Cates' Thor for one panel or something. But you're
it's
not supposed
his punishment
to,
for killing the Watcher. And I forget why he killed the Watcher in the first place.
It's not worth figuring out. Anyway, that's how they base. So Nick Fury, white Nick Fury, still like exists, but it's not him. He's basically this other person, and you'll never, ever see white Nick Fury again. So now, because the Ultimate Universe is done, that's how they got him into the mainstream Marvel Universe. And now, literally, it's like whenever another hero sees Marcus Johnson, a.k.a. Nick Fury Jr., who now they're just calling Nick Fury, it's as if he's been there this entire time, and now no one ever talks about white Nick Fury. It's like he never even existed, which is
that's the weirdest part. Everyone's just like, oh, it's Nick Fury. It's Nick Fury. Hey, Nick Fury. As if he's always been Nick Fury. This would have been less weird if they just, well, I guess they didn't know they were going to do Secret Wars and end the Ultimate Universe and merge it with the Marvel Universe and blah, blah, blah. But a much better explanation would just be Nick Fury from the Ultimate Universe ends up in the Marvel Universe.
That's what I always wanted.
I'd be okay with that, at least. At least that would be a more interesting story than this one, and less contrived.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the Punisher that we see around now is actually the Ultimate Punisher.
I heard you mention that, and I still don't fully understand how that works. So what happened to Frank Castle then? Well, he became Cosmic Ghost Rider, but that's like an alternate reality or something.
That's an alternate feature. During Secret War, Ultimate Punisher killed regular Punisher and just took over. Because why not? It was in one of the spinoffs, I think, like Ultimate End or Secret War Ultimate End or something. It's bad. Anyway, yeah. They could have just, I would have been happy if they had, like, you know, Samuel Jackson in the movies, and then for the sake of tradition, David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury in the comics. But no, because Disney is freaking greedy, and that's how this happened.
Is it even greed, or is it just stupidity? Did they make another dollar off making the comic Nick Fury into Sam Jackson, essentially? Did anybody go out and say, oh, look, it's Sam Jackson Nick Fury that's in this book. I'll buy this now. I highly doubt it. I think it's just corporate stupidity of, like, you know, people that don't understand comics, don't understand storytelling, going, hey, Nick Fury, he's Sam Jackson now. So you guys got to make him Sam Jackson in the story. So, yeah, go ahead and do that. It's like it's Disney executives just decreeing things that can never make sense. So these guys, I guess, did their best job to make it make sense. The fact that Marvel didn't even get, you know, they didn't get some of their top writers to do this. They didn't say this is the most important story we can tell, so we got to make sure it's told right. No. They got these two, screw it, I'm just going to call them jabronis because I feel like it. I'm sure they're nice guys. They got these two jabronis who no one's ever heard of before or since, except their mothers, I presume. And they tossed them on this book and said, do something. And just as long as it ends with Nick Fury being Sam Jackson. And I guess, hey, you know what? Screw it. Toss Phil Coulson in there. Because why not?
Yeah, I'm happy that we did this episode only because I now know that we never have to do it again.
And I now know that we can get through even the worst and worst of stories and still have a decent time doing it.
Is this our lowest score? This is.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Our lowest before, because, I mean, I think we're going to be a little biased a lot of these times because you and I are producing the episode, so we're going to pick stories that we generally have maybe at least somewhat fond memories of, even if they're, you know, nostalgic memories and the story turns out to be not quite as great as we remember. But in this case, I mean, I don't think anybody's nostalgic about this, but I guess I'm glad I know now. I didn't really know how it all went down, and now I can say that I know. I have a question for you, Remzo, because previously in another episode, I believe it was the Pandemic Reading List, we both said that Heroes in Crisis was the worst story we'd ever read. If you were trapped in a room and you were forced to read one comic book story every day for the rest of your life, and you had to choose that story, and it would either be this story, Battle Scars, or it would be Heroes in Crisis, which would you choose?
Heroes in Crisis.
Not even close. I would absolutely
not even close.
And before today, I think I might have actually said that's the worst story I've ever read.
I feel, yeah.
At least, like, more stuff happened in that. There was, like, you know, there's weird stuff I could think about.
We talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, it still has repercussions.
I can get happy angry at that. I can't even get fun. I can get fun anger at Heroes in Crisis. I can't even get those kind of emotions out of this. I'm just bored. It's just boring. It's just really boring.
This is... I feel confident now, really having talked about it. This is the worst comic book I've ever read.
I think I'm with you. I don't know. Maybe I'll find something. If anybody has any suggestions, because now I'm on the quest. Can we find something that gets a 1 or a 2? I mean, to get a 1, you'd have to have less than a 1 on either art or writing. So that would be really impressive. But
yeah, like typos in the panels and stuff.
Like unfinished panels. I don't know how you get much lower. But yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's much else to say about this. I just can't wait to go read. As soon as we finish this call, we have a call for our journey.
Unclean.
Yes. But as soon as I can, I'm going to read anything else. Just anything else. I don't care what it is. The back of a napkin. I'm going to just see what I scribbled on it.
A ketchup packet.
Yeah. Oh, the ketchup packet. That sounds great. That actually does sound great compared to this, because I probably don't know all the ingredients in ketchup. There'll probably be some things that surprise me in there, some chemicals I haven't heard of, like dextrin or dextrose or sucralose or something, and then I'll say, oh, I wonder what that really is. Nothing like that happens in Battle Scars. Yes, the back of a ketchup packet, I'm confident in saying, would get a higher writing score than this.
Yes.
At least a 1.5 for the back of the ketchup.
Well, that's all I got, Mark.
That's all I've got. I've got nothing left to give.
Folks, We give because we love. And show us some love on Patreon. Check out our reviews.
I hate Hawken. I don't hate Hawken. I love Hawken. But if there is any time that we actually deserve to finally, you know, get paid for this, not finally, we've been getting paid by a few of our wonderful patrons. But if there's any time we really deserve a Christmas bonus here of some kind, a Halloween bonus, whatever you want to call it.
A warm blanket, a pat on the back.
A blanket, a hug.
An attaboy.
Yeah. Send me a text. Send me something. Tweet to us. Just tell us that you feel our pain, if nothing else.
Comics are supposed to make you happy. This didn't do that.
Imagine if this was someone's first comic book.
Oh, God.
which I gotta imagine, in some ways, is the point of this, because they're trying to bring in the people that are fans of Marvel universes, of the MCU movies. They want to show people, look, we got Samuel Jackson. Look, we got Phil Coulson. My God, I can't even imagine.
Find the good episodes at secondprintcomics.com. That's about it. As always, I'm Remster W. Martinez.
And I am the mighty, 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 might oh so mighty to have gotten through this story, Mark Claire. And until next time,
read comics, change the world. Good night, America.